Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
Guest is Bradley James Davies. He is a school leadership consultant and coach with 2 decades of experience teaching, coaching, and leading independent schools across all grade levels as a dean, division head, and head of school. He invests in leaders' best selves and living their best lives. His clients span all sectors from technology and entertainment to government and education, and all levels of leadership from rising stars to C-suite veterans. He specializes in life transition, work-life team dynamics, leadership wellness, and adult development. He also brings to the table a unique capacity to compassionately challenge when needed. In addition to coaching leaders, he speaks and facilitates workshops on next level listening and leadership wellness 101. And he has recently published the book, School Leadership from A to Z, How to Lead Well Without Losing Your Way. Welcome to the podcast, Bradley.
Hey, thank you, Dana. Happy to be here with you.
Well, it's great to connect with you in the pre-chat, and I'm excited to dive more into your trench story. So we'll start off with a question I ask everybody at the beginning. Tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
I just first want to say that I love the premise of your podcast, Dana, to give voice to where folks have been and what they've been through. I just feel such a gift. So thank you for the work you do. My trench story is one where at 30, I was quite the shiny penny in the school world. I was leading a high school and loving it and feeling full of life and just seeing a super positive future in the work of changing the world by changing children's lives. And so that was me at 30. And then at 40, I had progressed to where I'd become in the independent school world, what is the equivalent of a small district superintendent, a head of school. So there I am at 40, an even shinier penny. All is going great. And at 46, I was on my back in an emergency room, believing I was about to die from a heart attack. And that's part of the sad story of the trenches. The reality is, thankfully, I'm very healthy physically. And on that night, I had had my first and only what seemed to be panic attack. And there I am on my back in the emergency room, staring up at the lights and, you know, a team of people working over me. And my reality in that moment, Dana, was very much capital T truth for me, was that I was about to die. And that's not the saddest part of the story. The saddest part of the story is a woman comes up next to me and says in my ear, "Sir, is there anyone you would like us to call?" And I whispered, "No, ma'am." And to clarify, she asked me again. She said, "Sir, are you sure? Is there anyone you would like us to call?" And I said again, "No, ma'am." And in that moment, Dana, a tear rolled down my cheek. And my truth at that time was that I was about to die, and I was about to die all alone. Hours later, I'm discharged from the hospital with a clean bill of health, but I knew something was not right. And I made my commitment on that day to walk away from school leadership. I had been thinking about it for a number of years, that while I was pretty good at the work was not good for me. And now this anxiety attack came at the apex of COVID, so clearly stress was a piece of it. And yet looking back 2 years before that, it was 3 years before that, it was the day before school started, and I was leading both an elementary school and a middle school, and I got shingles. And so on the telemed appointment, the doctor looked at the symptoms and said, "Well, clearly you have shingles, because shingles are catalyzed by stress. Are you under any stress?" And with total honesty, both to the doctor and to myself, I very enthusiastically said, "No, I'm not under any stress." Well, the day before school started, because of cost-cutting measures, I was seeking to lead two different schools on two different campuses. Jeez. Of course there was stress. Of course there was stress. And all of your listeners would be like, of course there's stress. But what I was woken up to on that emergency room table and that emergency room visit, that I wasn't aware to, that my body was trying to raise my awareness to, what my mind would not allow me to see, is that I was absolutely under stress, borderline exhaustion, year after year after year. And the work was literally killing me. Back up a few years before that, when I was, in deep disagreement and tension and conflict with my board, I remember a day laying on the couch in a fetal position, not just a case of the Sunday blues, but deep sense of situational depression, of lamenting the reality that I had to go back to school the next day. So you have these three episodes over a span of 5 or 6 years, from situational depression to shingles, to then this anxiety attack. And it just became clear to me that, wow, this is not healthy for me. And I transitioned away and really crash landed a career. And that's me crawling away from the trenches. And I must say too, and I offer this to your listeners, that it took me a number of years and a lot of internal work, working with a coach, working with a counselor, to begin to help myself get over the narrative of failure, that I wasn't a failure for walking away from work that I believed in passionately, that I was a fool, that I wasn't a wimp for walking away, but that I most certainly had lost my way. And so now in my work, I seek to help other school leaders invest the wellness practices that are absolutely requisite to not just be able to do the work and do it well, but to be able to flourish in the work, and to ensure that we're not just giving our best selves to other people's children and other adults, but rather that we still have the energy left to invest that back in our own family.
Yeah, and I think that's a powerful story, just given that you had gotten into a leadership role at such a young age, and you moved up the ladder and that became your all, right? You'd had these three warning signs. And like you said, it crash landed when you had that anxiety attack and then realized that there was nobody to call. It was really that wake up call for you. And you'd had these warning signs, like you said, something needed to change during these other episodes, but you ignored it. And you said you weren't stressed. Like, it's a total denial.
Complete. And I must say, my bias aside, obviously, because I do leadership coaching for school leaders, it is one of my fundamental recommendations to leaders across all sectors that they have a counselor and or a leadership coach. But what a leadership coach could have helped me see are my own blind spots in those moments. You know, imagine being in a session with a coach and saying, yeah, and I told them I wasn't stressed. And that coach being able to say, pause, let's pause on that premise.
Mm-hmm.
What makes you say you're on stress? Oh, no, I'm fine. How fine are you really? And I had no one in my life to really push. And it's incredible to me in my own journey and working with clients, how the person on the planet that we are most inclined to deceive is ourselves. And that's where I was. I was in a complete state of deception that the way I was going about the work was sustainable and healthy. I had two failed relationships that were and are so important to me that failed. And I think the way I was going about the work contributed mightily to it. And then obviously the health manifestations as well. I was a whisper of my best self. I flexed to flourish at school. And I thereby floundered at home with my family and friends that obviously mattered the most. It was epic failure. And I'm grateful now. And I must say, Dana, it's kind of a surreal place to be both, to hold two truths in tension that are seemingly contradictory, to be both very sad that things happened as they did, and also to be so grateful in gladness for the place where I am now. And, you know, I wish I could shield much pain from people I loved during that time where I was not my best self. And now I'm just really grateful that I can help others avoid getting to that low place, that trench, where I so obviously got.
Mm-hmm. So let's transition a little bit to talking about your book, School Leadership from A to Z, How to Lead Well Without Losing Your Way. I know this came out of your story, and talk to me about kind of the writing of the book and then a little bit about how what people can get from reading it.
Yeah, so School Leadership from A to Z, How to Lead Well Without Losing Your Way, started for me as part of my healing process of just beginning to write about the difficult experiences I had. And from there, I started to amass a collection of essays and started thinking, gosh, I would love to write a book. And it's the story I love to tell as I partnered with a self-publishing consulting group that help authors like us bring a helpful message to the world. And I was convinced that I wanted to write a midlife crisis book. I do think there's an opportunity in our culture to reclaim the midlife crisis as something positive. I call it my midlife chrysalis. I think there's an opportunity and really follows a predictable psychological arc of adult development that at midlife we should be taking time to reflect and in the spirit of chrysalis, seizing the opportunity to transform our lives. So I'm on the phone with this book consultant and I'm telling him about, you know, my midlife chrysalis book idea. And there I am crying, Dana. Like, I mean, in the education world, if the child was acting like I was acting, we would have said, wow, there are really big feels about this, aren't there? And he was tremendous. And he said, wow, sounds like, you know, you have real strong feelings about this midlife crisis narrative, et cetera. And I just knew in that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, I am not ready to write a midlife crisis book. But I'd started to write about my school leader experience. And he asked this great question. And I offer it to you and any of your listeners who are interested in writing a book. He said, well, let me ask you this question. If we were to give you a microphone, put you on a stage, and have you answer, you know, a Q&A session for 2 hours to a room full of thousands of people, what could you do without any preparation? What topic could you host Q&A about for 2 hours without any preparation? And I shared with him, well, it would be about schools and school leadership and the ups, downs, and all arounds of that life. And he said, okay, great. And who's in the crowd? I said, well, aspiring school leaders, current school leaders, veteran school leaders. He said, great. Well, who specifically is in the crowd? And then I said, well, my little brother, Andrew. Andrew would be in the crowd because he's just an epically amazing human. He's a tremendous fourth grade teacher. And he's inclined to go into school leadership because he wants to earn more money to provide for his family. And I'm just worried about him. He's just a beautiful soul. And if I got beat up by the work, I can nearly guarantee he's going to be beaten up by the work. So I must say, I would want Andrew in the crowd. And he said, well, you might write a midlife crisis book someday, but my sense is your first book is a book about school leadership. And your audience avatar is your little brother, Andrew. Write a book to your little brother. And I was just so inspired in that moment. I thought, wow, I can take this pain and help people like Andrew avoid the pitfalls that I experienced so painfully. And so I sat down and started writing in earnest. And the collection of essays that is the book, they're alphabetized and they're, you know, bite-sized essays, everything from A is for appreciation, all the way up, you know, to like Y is for you're really not fun, not that funny, and Z is for zebra, and E is for email, and a bunch of fun essays in between, really serve as part how to and part how not to. Certainly there are tricks of the trade and leadership hacks that I share that I think will be helpful for folks to embrace as their own and scale as they see fit. And then there are words of warning and real wellness lessons in there where I try to, in a really vulnerable, honest way, offer to readers, hey, this is where I wasn't my best, and here's what you can do to avoid the same mistakes I made.
Mm-hmm. And you told me in a pre-chat, it's kind of like the Michael Jordan principle standard, right? That everybody's trying to be the best, and it's an ideal that's impossible to meet. And that's kind of the narrative that you're telling these current leaders, right? That if they don't take care of themselves, they're going to, you know, have that midlife crisis.
Yeah, and Dana, I really appreciate you bringing us back to that place. When I do my leadership wellness 101 workshop and keynote with school leaders, I joke, I say, listen, there are three types of school leader who do not need this time together. One is the new leader. you know, they're just in the honeymoon phase and they're so proud of themselves. They finally got there and life is great. You know, those first few months of school leadership, I was like, hey, your time's coming, but I get if you don't feel like you really need this right now. The second type of school leader that doesn't need any wellness work at all is the narcissist school leader. And I joke that, well, don't worry, because the narcissist didn't come to the conference anyway, because they think they're fine. And interestingly, we've all met a narcissist and school leader or two. They actually do pretty good work for schools because their success is obviously intertwined with the school's success. But they're not super interested in wellness opportunities either. And then the last type of school leader who typically won't need any wellness workshop with me or anyone else is the unicorn school leader, the Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of these leaders on social media, and I think they have wonderful intentions. They have this unique wiring, and it is as unique as a Michael Jordan, as a LeBron James, that they do the work well. They don't, the weight of it is not burdensome to them. They do it joyfully. And then they get on social media and they're like, hey, everybody, this is how awesome you should be. And the narrative very much is a be awesome like me. And the problem is that folks wired like you and I are, and your listeners are, we really believe we should be Michael Jordan every day. You know, God on a good day with a great sense of humor. And that standard is an impossibility to meet for the vast majority, I'm talking 99% of humans on the planet. And so here we are with a lot of voices in the school leader space, kind of actually exacerbating the problem that, oh, I'm supposed to be like that and I can't be. So now I feel like a failure on top of feeling exhausted and stressed. And so my approach is, hey, I was a pretty gosh darn good school leader. It's, you know, probably about as good as you are, probably about as good as all of your listeners. And I got my rear end kicked. And yeah. So to be able to sit in a space and be really vulnerable, really honest and say, hey, y'all, this is hard. And here are the lessons I learned. I beg you to implement these wellness practices now so mm-hmm. that, you know, your experience doesn't become my own.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's good to point out because there are people that, you know, they set that standard, right? And then everybody around them will sacrifice their well-being to try to hit the standard. But I think ultimately this unicorn leader will crash and burn and probably have something similar to what happened to you. That's unsustainable.
It is my hunch as well. And I don't wish.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
Sit upon any of them, and yet if and when it happens, I just want them to know that there's help out there and there's folks in this space to help them once, you know, their wings get wobbly and they have to crash land as well. You know, the by extension, what happens when we school leaders try to embrace a Michael Jordan standard of leadership, we take our teachers with us.
Yeah.
And so the wellness of the entire campus is compromised because of our deception of what the standard should be, rather than just a real humanity, a real campus culture of compassion, empathy. My message to school leaders, and it just bristles them initially because it is so contrary to our idealistic wiring. But my message is the best way to improve your school / yourself is not by doing more, but becoming more. And what bristles school leaders to hear me say is this, do less, be more. In order to do less, and this is when they're like, oh boy, I don't know if I can do that. In order to do less, you need to care less. But wait a second, we want to change the world by changing children's lives. Amen. Yes. And yet, it's kind of like in golf when, and I don't know how many of your listeners are golfers, I'm lousy and hardly ever golf, but the analogy works. You're taught not to squeeze the heck out of the club. You need to hold the club with some firmness, otherwise obviously it'll fly out of your hand. But if you choke that club, you can't swing well, you can't hit the ball well. So many of us are so idealistic. Sprinkle in some ambition, and we are holding so tightly that it compromises our wellness, the wellness of those around us, etc. But the reality is, if we loosened up a little bit, if we cared a little less, if we rolled with it a little bit more, the inputs we invest in our schools and our team will still be the same. We're still going to make good decisions with the limited resources we have. We're still going to hire to the best of our ability. We're still going to offer observations and coach teachers. The inputs will be the same, yet the spirit upon which we go about it will be different for all those in our world, and especially for us. So truly a bit of a countercultural message when it comes to school cultures for me is, do less, care less. You're never going to be apathetic. Never. It's not your wiring. You're always going to be idealistic. But can you just ease off the throttle? Ease off the throttle. Slow down. Soften. Show up to your school every day. Cultivate the garden that it is. Do it gently for yourself and for all those you lead.
Yeah. And like you said, I think your staff will then see, like, you know, there's a different demeanor coming from leadership, and they'll feel like they aren't held to such a standard as well.
100%. Because we have to remember too, our teachers, well, many of them are barely getting there in the morning. Barely getting there. It's a miracle that they got there. Their teeth are brushed. They're ready to roll. Their lessons are planned. That's a miracle right there. Because many of them were dealing with their own family, their own children, their own partner challenges, all the things. So all these humans gathering on any particular day on any particular school campus around the world, all these stories, all these stresses coming together, have a leader lead with grace, understanding. Yeah, of course, excellent. Of course we do what's best for kids. Of course we work hard. And yet, let's breathe. Let's actually do less. Let's care a little bit less so that we can be more, not just for ourselves, not just for our families, and ultimately for the children.
Such an important message. I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the other writing you've done. So you have an article on your website that you wrote for NAIS. It's about introverts and leadership. So you said that you were an introvert when you started, and maybe for a newer principal or an assistant principal, how is that lead to becoming, I would say, a better leader or a more sympathetic and empathetic leader by being an introvert?
Yeah, so I think the narrative around introversion and extroversion is a really important one when it comes to leadership, life in general. I am a very, very strong introvert. I love people, love a good party, a good public speaker. You would see me as outgoing. And yet I'm very introverted. And so I think just basic understanding around introversion and extroversion is important. A lot of people misunderstand. They mistake outgoing people for extroverts and shy people for introverts. And that's not true. I know a lot of shy people who are actually very extroverted. The definition of it, according to this Myers-Briggs personality assessment, which is a little bit different than Susan Cain's work in her book, Quiet, which is a wonderful book worth reading. And the definition of introversion versus an extrovert is how we get our energy. So introverts need alone time to recharge their batteries. Extroverts need people time to recharge their batteries. So a good way to think about this that I like to say is that an introvert and extrovert go to a party. After that party, an introvert is looking to go home to crash, and an extrovert is looking for another party to crash. And so a school day for a school leader is very much like a cocktail party without the cocktail. It is nonstop talk. It is nonstop chit-chat, meeting after meeting after meeting. And so if you're an introvert by the end of the day, it is understandable based on your core wiring that you're going to be very low energy.
Mm-hmm.
Extrovert, I believe extroverts have an incredible advantage in leadership because as they have these conversations, at the very worst, it's a neutral exchange of energy. Oftentimes, it's a positive one, even if the conversation is difficult. So in my essay, Introverts Beware, I really draw the attention to introverts, like, hey, if you're in leadership, you need to be really mindful of how you're recharging your energy. And then I go into strategies about how to do that. One quick one is, instead of being always in your office, remember, our offices are not places where we go to work. They're places where we go to be found. Mm-hmm. And teachers have an off period. So if they need to go talk to Mr. Davies, whoever the principal is, they go to their office. They have 45 minutes or an hour, and they may earlock you for that entire time. So one, you know, quick recommendation that I make to all leaders, and especially introverts, is go work in places where you are invisible in plain sight. So in the middle of a hallway, you're doing email, etc. You get little cute kids going by you, so you're recharged in that way. And that teacher wants to talk to you, they'll come talk to you in the hallway still. But now that you're out in the hallway, they'll only spend about 5 or 10 minutes with you instead of the full 45. Another great place to go is the back of a classroom. Walk in the classroom, open up your laptop, do your work. A kid will come up and interrupt you every once in a while. They'll say hello, but that's a wonderful interruption. And then afterwards, you send a quick email to the teacher saying, hey, thanks for letting me hide out in your classroom. I loved what I saw. So it's a win-win. So that's some of the spaces where I go when I talk about introversion. And also, to your point, is I want to underscore to introverts that we tend to be think twice, speak once people, whereas introverts can tend towards speak twice, think once. And so our approach in meetings can be really beneficial to ensuring that the best ideas are coming to the table. And one recommendation I have, in the spirit of a drop of intentionality gets you a gallon back, for both introverted and extroverted leaders to be very mindful in meetings about if they're speaking first. Introverts, by nature, have an inclination not to speak first, so that's an advantage. Because think about what happens. You go to your staff meeting, you have a problem to solve, and Dana offers the solution as the leader and invites her team to give her feedback. Well, she's just put her team in a very difficult situation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She's invited her team to contradict her in front of the entire team. That's a big ask. No, she's done it with the best of intentions, and she really actually wants people to push back on her. And yet she hasn't recognized the difficult place she's put her team in. By contrast, and introverts are inclined to do this, yet not all do, the best way to go about that situation is we convene around this problem. Thanks, guys. I'd love to hear all ideas. All ideas are good ideas right now. We'll poke holes in them in a minute. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are. Well, Dana has an idea of probably what's the best way forward. And based on your experience, there's a real good chance it is the best way forward. And yet now you hear from two of your five leadership team members that same idea. And now as a leader, since your team went first, you can say, hey, I'm really interested in what Jenny and Bob shared. Can we explore that further? They don't necessarily know that that's the direction you wanted to go from the get-go. And yet now you're building consensus before you even laid one card on the table. So it's one example of, in terms of introversion and extroversion. One, of course, energy management, but two, about how do we go about our leadership? And introverts do have a lot to offer in that regard. So I don't want to scare introverts away from the work because we need them in the work. I just want them to really have a keen awareness about managing their energy. And then also recognizing that, hey, I've got real, real strengths to offer this work that extroverts may not come to it easily.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting perspective, and you know, how different workspaces in the building help versus, you know, how you know, inviting people to speak first in a meeting, but what's your intention with that and everything. So you know, I'll put the link to that article in the show notes for anybody to read that. I wanted to follow up a little bit on your speaking in some of your workshops. So you said you have Leadership Wellness 101, and you do another workshop as well, Next Level Listening, that you wanted to highlight. I know there are leaders out there who those who might be extroverts who are not always the best listeners. So
yes, well, I appreciate the space to highlight it. So I started my leadership coaching training, gosh, 4 years ago now, with Georgetown University. And before that, I had worked with the Hudson Institute, and another organization called IPEC. So I've just received all this training on coaching and listening. And I merged with it, Dana, and went into the program based on real positive experiences I had with leadership coaching, thinking, gosh, if I had had a leadership coach over the last 20 years, I'd be 20x the human being I am right now. And by extension, 20x the leader, 20x the partner, 20x the friend.
Yeah.
So that was really my conviction in going into leadership coaching. And yet in working with leaders, a new conviction emerged that, wow, the listening skills that I have developed because of this fantastic training at Georgetown and other places, if I had been the listener I am now over the last 20 years, I'd be 20x the human being, 20x the partner, 20x the friend. And the listening strategies are not complicated. They're challenging to normalize. And yet I've been able to distill these listening skills down into fun keynote and even up to a 2-day workshop. And so a new passion, a new mission of mine is to, overall my mission is to help heal the world. And one way I do that is working on wellness with folks, leaders across all disciplines. And another way is like, wow, if the world overnight improved their listening skills by 10x, imagine the world we live in. Imagine the conflict around the planet right now. What if we learn to listen better? And the subtitle of my talk is how to be the best listener in the room, be that the boardroom, the classroom, or the family room. Imagine how relationships could change if we were all 10x better listeners. So it's a new passion of mine, and I'm just thrilled when I get to present it, and the feedback is fantastic. And I just believe, what if we can extrapolate this to teaching teachers how to be 10x listeners, and then by extension, children, students, how to be 10x listeners? I believe we could change the world monumentally within the span of one generation with these skills. So I'm excited. It is not something I had on my radar, but it's become an absolute passion of mine.
All just from going to this training and how you discovered, your skills at listening, right? And how that really improves relationships across the board. So, I think that's a workshop offering, as I mentioned in the pre-chat, that a lot of people I've talked to, that's not something I hear people offer. So wanted to make sure that's highlighted.
Yeah, and I appreciate, Dana, when you Google, communication, improved communication, et cetera, the vast majority of content out there is about public speaking and how to convey your message more clearly. Mm-hmm. Number two, a distant number two, would be about writing more clearly and effectively. But it is a very rare offering that we talk about within the broader umbrella of communication, our listening skills, the ability to listen. And think about it as a school leader. What is your work actually? Your work is to strategize, okay? And in order to create a good strategy, you need to understand and have good information. So listening skills are absolutely crucial in that regard. What really is going on in your school community such that you can use that data to create a compelling strategy? Part of your work is to share your school story. Well, how are you going to share your school story if you haven't heard all the robust stories present within your community? Down the list we go of all of our work that we do as school leaders, and my gosh, as humans, is anchored in our ability to gain new information. And so to listen with this hope of gaining more information, developing more empathy with the person with whom you're speaking, is game changer. And I just, again, I think we can change the world within one generation if we were to embrace these very simple, non-rocket science listening strategies, and then to be able to make them commonplace and habituate them in our day-to-day communication would be huge. So I'm thrilled to do it and pretty jazzed about it.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to wrap things up and ask you, based on what we've mentioned about your events that led to you leaving the principalship, your book, and some of these workshops that you do, out of everything we've talked about, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
Well, I'm gonna go off the playbook a little bit and do two. One quick one, one longer one. On a very practical level, Dana, I would beg school leaders not to lead alone, to get yourself a buddy bench. colleagues in the work with whom you can be really honest and vulnerable with, and also a counselor or a coach. Don't lead alone. The work is too hard to do so. But number two, and when we spoke a little while back, when you planted this question with me, I thought, gosh, what would I love to share? And a story I'd never shared publicly, but I'm going to now, is my favorite story to share. I've shared it with, you know, individual friends, but never on a podcast or in writing. And I think I'm inspired to share it because I'm visiting my mom right now in St. Petersburg, Florida. And here's my favorite story about my mom. And the ultimate message for your listeners is this: peace is the prize. And here's the story. I think I was in third, fourth grade, and I was practicing breakdancing on like a lime green linoleum kitchen floor back in Minnesota as a kid. And my mom was cooking dinner at the time. And that day during school, one of the kids introduced me to this concept of, if you had three wishes, what would you wish for? And so I asked my mom that question, and she kind of lovingly dismissed me, like, oh, son, you know, she wasn't going to play with that game right now. And, you know, I was kind of at her feet working on my backspin or whatever. I said, Mom, really, if you had three wishes, what would you wish for? And I was so excited to hear what my mom had to say. And she, again, kind of patted me on the head, like, nah, I'm just not playing with that, as she stirred dinner. And I asked her again, and I can still see her gently put down, like, you know, what I see is like this wooden spoon, and turn to me gently and say, son, I would wish for peace, and someday you'll understand. And in the way she conveyed that to me, David, I knew not to push. I knew not to say, no, you have two more wishes, or come on, if you have one wish, you wish for a million more wishes.
Yeah.
She just said it with such a serenity of truth. And now, looking back, I know that she was the mother of two, about to get divorced, probably terrified, exhausted. And for her to be able to draw upon that life lesson to share with her son in such a way that it stuck to my soul from, you know, fourth grade all the way till now, it anchors my core belief that peace is the prize. And so I would offer to your listeners, as you do some of the most difficult work on the planet, do less, care less, be more, and pursue a peace that transcends all understanding, not success, not increased enrollment, not better test scores. Can you bring peace to yourself, to your inner circle, and to the communities you serve? Because I just believe fundamentally that peace is the prize. And if you don't understand now, in the spirit of my mom, someday you will.
Important message. Thanks for sharing. Where can people connect with you and find you online?
So I'm on a whole bunch of socials, Instagram at bradley.james.davies, Facebook, Bradley James Davies, LinkedIn, Bradley James Davies, and then my website is www.bradleyjamesdavies.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being my guest on the Out of the Trenches podcast. I learned a lot, and it was great to just hear about everything that you've learned leading to your leadership coaching and consulting.
Well, thank you, Dana. I really enjoyed our time together.
My book, Out of the Trenches, Stories of Resilient Educators, has now been published. You can access it through Amazon. You can buy it at the Road to Awesome website, or you can get it through my website at danagoodyear.com. Please leave a review, and you can also access it on Kindle.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.